Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymere Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymere.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at Graymere Church of Christ.
To finally be here, I know you're all excited to get started with this. We are studying what to do when ... I believe is the theme, if I understand it correctly. And tonight we're going to be talking about what to do when our culture changes. I think Andrew was excited to get an intern because it would mean that he got to take some extra vacation time. That was a joke that did not go over well, but that's okay. Andrew is still in Phoenix and will be back, I believe, Saturday. They're flying in and they'll be back here Sunday. So we're looking forward to that, I'm sure. I know I am looking forward to having another week in the office. This week, I've been helping out with JD in the kids' camp, which has gone over very well. I'm thankful for all of you allowing your kids to come to that. And I'm also thankful to any of our golden agers who came out and participated in the games Monday afternoon and ate lunch with us. I think it went over really well, and I think that it was beneficial for everyone involved, for sure. It's been very encouraging to get to hang out with those little kids and get to know some of them on a more personal note as well. So it's been a good week, but I am, as I'm sure all of you are, looking forward to the Phillips being back in town. So tonight, as I said, we're going to be talking about what to do when our culture changes. And to understand this topic and to get started in this topic, I think it is important that we understand what the word culture means. And Oxford's dictionary defines culture in several different ways, but one of those ways that I think will be most helpful for us is the customs, arts, social institutions, and achievements of a particular nation, people, or other social group. In other words, it is what makes us up as a people. It is what makes us up, and it's kind of our identity as a group of people, as a country or as a nation or just as a community. It is what makes us who we are. It is our values, our goals, our interests, and those types of things. And we certainly live in a fast-paced culture. We live in a very fast-moving culture where it is hard to keep up. And if you think about it, culture really can change a lot. Culture can change in a lot of different ways and a lot of very quickly. And to kind of illustrate this, I wanted to think about just the technology that we've seen impact our culture throughout my lifetime and the way we've seen things go. I remember when the only phone my family had was a home telephone. And I remember it was a 5.6. I don't really know what that was measuring, but it said 5.6 on it, and it meant that we could go farther away from the answering machine and be able to still talk on the phone. There would still be signal. But I remember going out into our yard and all of a sudden losing that signal, and I wasn't close enough. And then I had to walk back closer to the house, and then it picked back up, and I could talk on our home phone again. But then we had cell phones, and then it no longer mattered where I was in the yard, and I could go, you know, anywhere. And I remember one of the first telephones that my parents got was a little bitty flip phone. And I ran across the box, and no one today would want to try to text on this thing, but it said a text messaging phone. That's what it classified itself as. And that just blew my mind because of how small and how difficult it would be to text on it. And so I've experienced a cell phones going from a brick to itsy bitsy to large again, but with all these different updates and accessories. I can remember when it cost money to have a picture or to take a picture with your phone, and you had a limited number of pictures that you could take with your phone. And then I remember when all of a sudden you could take an unlimited number of pictures on your phone. I remember when Almost everyone had a limited number of minutes that they could talk on the phone and a limited number of text messages that they could send. And all of that has changed throughout my lifetime. And I've seen the explosion of social medias pop up as well between the first big one, which was MySpace, and then Facebook, and then Instagram and Twitter, and just so many different social medias that have come, and they have all had a huge impact on our culture. One way, I think, to demonstrate how culture has changed is just to think about sports. If you think about sports, baseball used to be one of the most popular and most talked about sports. But then, football became more popular and began to be watched more often. And now, soccer is one of the fastest growing sports, and more people are gaining interest in soccer. So I feel as if that's a good way of just illustrating how culture has changed. And it's sometimes fun to sit back and to think about how it is that cultures change and how it is that just times have changed from the just different conveniences and inventions that have been brought into our lives. But it's also can be kind of sad to talk about how culture has changed. It can be kind of sad to think about all the ways and all the different things that have come into our lives that have been kind of negative. Because it, to some degree, seems as if some things have changed. And some of the things that we hold important, such as a nice house, or a nice car, nice clothing, likes on Facebook, and all of these things do not carry a very high worth. They're not anything that really matters, but yet it's something that our culture has placed a high level of emphasis on. And it's frightening to think about all the different ways that we've seen our culture change. We now have to be worried about security at church events. We now have to make sure that there are security measures and protocols taking place at events like VBS because of the church shootings that have taken place all across the United States, even within an hour from here in Antioch. It's crazy to think about all the craziness that is going on in our lives. Pornography has gotten easier to get, and it's now free, and most of us carry access around in our pockets. There's also homosexuality that is now, people can now legally get married. And all of these things, a lot of us never would have imagined would take place. A lot of us never would have thought that this one day would have been the way things were. But here it is. And it is this way. And even the divorce rate, it has gone down, but that's only because less people are getting married and more people are living together. So it seems just like in every way possible, things are getting worse rather than better. But the first thing that's important for us to recognize is that while our culture might change, God never changes. And His expectations for us don't change. God doesn't change, and His expectations for us do not change. The book of Daniel is a place where we can go and we can see lots of examples of cultural changes take place. We can see a lot of examples of people who experience just kind of culture shock to some degree, where new challenges are presented. And it starts off with Daniel and his three friends being taken into Babylonian captivity. And this all takes place in Daniel chapter 1. In Daniel chapter 1, we see that King Nebuchadnezzar is taking captive those young men who are faultless, faultless. They're good looking. They're smart. They're going to be able to become leaders in his kingdom. He's trying to essentially doctrinize them in his culture so that they can be leaders the way he wants them to lead. And I feel like any time this lesson is taught, we're presented with the question, can you imagine being a young man taken from your home, brought to a foreign land, where you were going to be forced to adapt and adopt their traditions and teachings? Can you imagine what that would be like? What that would be like to experience all of that, all of those difficulties, all of those fears, all of those anxieties that would come with that immense cultural change? They were brought into a new culture, and then they were given new names. They were expected to change their diet, and this is where it gets tricky. And this is where it gets tricky, because this was against God's will. God did not want them, God had put them on a specific diet, and there were certain things that they could not eat. But King Nebuchadnezzar was about to give them this food. He was about to give them this food to eat, and it was going, and if they ate it, they were going to be sinning against their God. So let's look at how they handled this situation. We're going to start reading in Daniel chapter 1. Daniel chapter 1 and verse 8. But Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank. Therefore, he asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself. And God gave Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord the king who assigned your food and your drink. For why should he see that you were in worse condition than the youths who are of your own age? So you are endangering my head with the king. Then Daniel said to the steward, whom the chief of the eunuchs had assigned over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, test your servants for 10 days. Let us be given vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance and the appearance of our youths who eat the king's food be observed by you, and deal with your servants according to what you see. So he listened to them in this matter, and tested them for 10 days. At the end of 10 days, it was seen that they were better in appearance and fatter in flesh than all the youths who ate the king's food. So the steward took away their food and the wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables. You see, whenever our culture changes, the first thing we must recognize is that God doesn't change, and because God doesn't change, we shouldn't change. When our culture changes, we don't. We stand resolved. See, because that's what Daniel and his friends did here. They stood resolved. They set in their hearts, they set in their mind that they were not going to defile themselves. They were not going to eat of this food that had been forbidden by God. They were not going to do it. They were resolved. They were determined. Their minds had been made up. They had made that decision. And because they had made that decision, they did something about it. They asked for new food. They asked for another option. They asked for an alternative. Can you imagine the boldness that had to take? Can you imagine the boldness and the determination that they had to have in order to ask this guy who was in charge of them for more food? That would have been a scary thing to do. Here they are in this new culture, surrounded by new people, young men who are far from home. And yet they ask for an alternative. Why? Because they were determined not to sin against God. They had made their minds up and they were resolved. We need to stand resolved when our culture changes. But how can we do this? How can we have the same level of being resolved as they did? Well, they were able to be resolved because they believed full-heartedly that God's way was the best way. They believed that God's way was the best way. And we see that by seeing that they were determined. They were so determined to not eat the food that would defile themselves that they asked for another food. And then they say, test us after 10 days. After 10 days, you will see that God's way is better. Logic and reason can lead us away from sin. The things God has told us not to participate in logically make sense for us not to participate in them. Imagine if everyone in our culture and in our world participated in sin. Imagine if everyone in our world participated in lying. If everyone you knew was a liar. Can you imagine how terrible our world would be? Can you imagine how terrible life would be? What if everyone you knew was sexually immoral? What if everyone you knew stole very regularly? Our culture would look very different, and it would be worse off. Whenever we look at how our culture would be if everyone participated in any one sin, we see that it would be a disaster. And that as a result of that, we know that God's way is supreme. We know that God's way is the best way. You see, God's wisdom surpasses cultural norms. And because God's wisdom surpasses cultural norms, we can know that God's way is the best way. Despite what the world advertises and what lies Satan tries to tell us, we know God's way is the best way. Even people who do not identify as Christians recognize that sin, that certain things are bad. They recognize that there are sins and that there are immoral things that we shouldn't participate in. And because they can recognize it, how much more clearly should we be able to recognize the same thing? We should be able to recognize that God's way is indeed the best way. So to wrap up with this story, to kind of look at some application and to draw some kind of some conclusions for us that now that we're done with this story, looking at and examining this story, there's some things we need to recognize. When our culture changes, we don't, but rather we lead faithfully. You see, these men, they needed a leader. They needed someone to step up and ask for an alternative food. And Daniel was that faithful leader. Okay, but then we also see that we need to be resolved. We need to have our minds determined. We need to have our minds made up. And then we need to remember that God's way is the best way. God's way surpasses our cultural norms. God's wisdom is supreme. The next thing we need to learn from the book of Daniel is that when our culture changes, we need to stand with the faithful. You see, this culture change that they experience next is a little bit more subtle, but it's still significant. And it's still frightening. And it might even have been more frightening, you see, because now it was a life or death situation. They're set with the option of bowing down to this image of King Nebuchadnezzar and worshiping it, or to staying true to the God of heaven, the God who created all things. And the decision, they remained resolved. They remained faithful. They remained focused on what they needed to do. In spite of their fear of death. If our lives were threatened, would we still be here? Would we still be assembling with other Christians if our lives were on the line? See, because this was the situation they were put in. Were they going to continue to live as God's people even though their lives were on the line? So they're set with this situation. They've been told that whenever they hear the music play, that they have to bow down to this image of King Nebuchadnezzar. They have to bow down to this statue. And they hear the music, and they do not bow down. Let's read, starting in Daniel chapter 3, in verse 8. Therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and maliciously accused the Jews. They declared to the king Nebuchadnezzar, "O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, pay no attention to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar, in furious rage, commanded that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought in. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said to them, Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now if you are ready, when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lay, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music to fall down and worship the image that I have made, well and good. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. Their resolve continued, but this time it continued through numbers. It continued with them being there together. See, when our culture changes, we do not, by standing with the faithful, by standing with those who are faithful. Can you imagine what this would have looked like? That everyone hears the sound of this music starting to play, and everyone bows down, and then there are these three men still standing there. Imagine how awkward it would be if one Sunday morning, Andrew's up there preaching, and all of a sudden, three men are just standing. Just standing and kind of, you know, maybe moving around a little awkwardly and stuff. But there they are, they're just standing, and Andrew continues to preach, and everyone else is continuing to pay attention and do what you're supposed to do. But you can't help but notice these three men who are standing. And you're like, what are they doing? Why are they doing that? And you know, Andrew's probably looking at him going, okay, why are you standing? What are you doing? And, you know, and someone's probably going, hey, sit down. You're being weird. Right? Someone would be trying to get their attention, asking them to sit down. Someone would be, you know, what's going on? Why are you doing this? You know, that there would be so many questions going through your head. And I'm sure that many of these questions were going through, or similar questions at least, were going through their heads whenever they saw these three Jewish men standing when everyone else was kneeling down. Why are they standing? Do they know what's going to happen to them if they don't kneel? Do they know what's going to happen to them if they continue just to stand there instead of kneeling down and worshiping this idol? They know they're going to be thrown into the fiery furnace, right? Hey, get down. So many things, so many just odd thoughts of why? Why are you doing this? We'd be going through everyone's head as they sat there and saw them refuse to bow down. Everyone would be so confused. But yet they were resolved not to stand. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego refused to worship this idol. And I find it interesting, in verse 12 of chapter 3, their accusers say, "O king, they pay no attention to you. O king, they pay no attention to you." That's what they're accused of doing. They're accused of not paying attention to the king's decree. But maybe that's a good practical point for us, is that we shouldn't pay attention to the culture changes around us. You see, God's expectations for us are going to remain the same. God doesn't change, and His expectations for us don't change. And therefore, we shouldn't worry about the cultural changes that take place. Maybe three years ago, when Peyton Manning had just won his last Super Bowl, a lot of people lost a lot of respect for Peyton Manning. Not because of the way he played. He had a good game and he won the game. He won his final Super Bowl. But then afterwards, he was being interviewed and people asked him, "Okay, so what now?" And he kept talking about wanting a specific beer, wanting a specific brand of beer. I don't remember what beer brand it was, but he said it time and time again. And the beer company came out and said, "We did not pay him to do that. We don't know why he did it. We're thankful that he did it, but we don't know why he did it." A lot of people assumed that he was paid to do so. A lot of people assumed that he was probably given a large sum of money to do so, but it didn't justify it to a lot of people. But they still, okay, at least that would have made a little bit of sense. But no, he just kind of said it. And a lot of people were disappointed, and my dad was one of those people. He's a Peyton Manning fan. He thinks he's one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the game. But why? Why did you have to say that? And I agree. Why did he have to say that? But it doesn't bother me as much. And here's why. Because we cannot expect people of the world to hold our same values. People who are in the world, people who are living of the world, we can't expect them to hold our same values. We can't expect them to live as a Christian if they're not a Christian. We can't expect them to have the same values that we do. We can't expect them to share in our conviction if they are not a Christian. The world is going to act worldly, and we should not be surprised by that. We should pay the world's worldliness no attention. We should pay our cultural changes no attention, because it shouldn't impact how we live as a Christian. The government and celebrities alike have no responsibility to help me live a moral life. And I think that's hard for us to grasp sometimes, because we want to see our government make godly decisions. I want to see our government make godly decisions. Don't misunderstand me. But we have to understand that our government does not hold us responsible for our godly decisions. The government has no responsibility to help me be a Christian. It has no responsibility to help me live godly. Again, I love to see our government make godly decisions. But it comes down to my decisions. It comes down to what I am going to do. It is up to me to live godly. It is not up to the government to help me do so. It is all on me. I often wonder what this story looks like. I wonder if they were at work whenever the music started playing and they were all supposed to bow down. Or I wonder if they were all at work and then they had to rush outside to where they could see the statue and then bow down toward it, to where they were in a large assembly of people and that everyone could see everyone. Or I wonder if they were just supposed to stop what they were doing and bow instantly. I don't know. I don't know if Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were together when they heard the music. And I don't know if they could see each other as they were standing and everyone else was kneeling. But I know that they knew the others were standing. Or at least I believe that they knew the others were standing. See, we can take comfort in knowing that there are other people who want to be faithful. We can take comfort in knowing that there are others who have the desire to faithfully live godly lives. 1 Peter chapter 5 talks about taking comfort in knowing that we have brothers and sisters throughout the world who are facing similar trials and temptations as we are. It should comfort us to know that we have brothers and sisters all across Columbia, all across Tennessee, and all across the United States who are trying to glorify God with their lives just as we are. We should take comfort in this, and it should motivate us to, when our culture changes, to stand with the faithful. Another aspect that we see in this story later on in chapter 3 is whenever they come out of the furnace and God has saved them, and the king Nebuchadnezzar is looking at them and he's going, "You don't even smell of smoke. You were put in there with even your clothes. Your clothes haven't even been burned at all. How is this even possible? Men that threw you into the furnace died because of how hot it was, but you, who were inside the furnace, are alive." There was only one explanation, and that was that God had saved them. God saved Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And because of that, King Nebuchadnezzar worshipped God. He worshipped God and he made a decree that others should worship God as well. See, God's goodness in that moment was demonstrated, and as a result, he was worshipped. You see, whenever we experience God's goodness in our lives, we too should share it. We should share the good things that God has done for us. You know, I have a great family by the grace of God. I have a great internship. Thanks be to God. You know, we should look for the blessings in our lives and recognize that God has had a hand in them. And we should give the thanks and the glory to God for those things, so that others might see the goodness of God and desire to worship Him for His goodness. We need to give credit to God because God deserves the credit. So the point of application, to sum up this story as well, and to make sure that we kind of grasp the take-home points. When our culture changes, we don't need to change, but we need to find people who are not going to change as well. We need to find people who we can stand in faith with. We need to find other faithful people. And then we need to remember that there are others in the world who are being faithful and who are going through similar difficulties as we are. And then we need to remember not to pay attention to the change, because our responsibility is to live godly no matter what. It doesn't matter how our culture changes, our responsibility is to live godly. And then the fourth application point is to share God's goodness with others. Talk about the way that God has blessed us. Talk about the goodness that God has shared in your life. And talk about it with others so that others may see it and may be motivated to worship God as well. The third story that we'll look at tonight is Daniel in the lion's den. The Daniel in the lion's den from Daniel chapter 6. Another very popular story, but where again Daniel experiences a culture change. And we'll see that through this story, when our culture changes, that we will need to kneel in prayer. Because that's exactly what Daniel's going to do. Daniel's going to continue to pray regularly, even when it could cost him his life. You see, at this point in Daniel's life, God has blessed him and God has given him the opportunity to be one of the highest officials. He's actually about to be made one of the heads over all of Babylon. He's going to go from being important to super important. But this made other people jealous. It made people jealous that Daniel was becoming so successful. It made people jealous that Daniel was becoming one of the king's favorite. And they said, okay, we've got to do something about this. We've got to do something. But the only option they had, the only way that they could get Daniel was through his faith. The only way they could get Daniel was by making some sort of law that would prevent him from being dedicated fully to his God. Because they knew what kind of man Daniel was. They knew that Daniel was resolved. They knew that Daniel had determined in his mind to be faithful to God. And for that reason, they knew that if they made this decree, that Daniel was going to break it. Daniel was going to break this law because he was going to be faithful to his God. And so, they did. And the king passes it. And in Daniel chapter 6 and verse 10, we'll start reading as to what happens. When Daniel knew that the document had been signed, he went to his house where he had windows in his upper chamber open toward Jerusalem. He got down on his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he had done previously. Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and plea before his God. Then they came near and said before the king concerning the injunction, O king, did you not sign an injunction that anyone who makes petition to any god or man within 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? The king answered and said, The thing stands fast according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be revoked. Then they answered and said before the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judea, pays no attention to you, O king, or the injunction you have signed, but makes his petition 3 times a day. Then the king, when he heard these words, was much distressed and set his mind to deliver Daniel, and he labored till the sun went down to rescue him. Then these men came by agreement to the king and said to the king, Know, O king, that it is the law of the Medes and the Persians that no injunction or ordinance that the king establishes can be changed. Then the king commanded, and Daniel was brought and cast into the den of lions. The king declared to Daniel, May your God, whom you serve continually, deliver you. And a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet and with the signet of his lords, that nothing might be changed concerning Daniel. Then the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting. No diversions were brought to him, and sleep fled from him. Knowing the rest of the story, knowing that Daniel was fine, it seems as if the king had a worse night than Daniel. See, Daniel had become such a close friend of the king, so respected by the king, that the king was worried to death about Daniel. He hated the fact that he had to do to Daniel what he did. He hated that he had to be put in the lion's den. So much so that he didn't eat. And he didn't sleep. He couldn't sleep. It's not that he didn't want to sleep. He couldn't sleep. That's one of the worst things in the world, is not being able to sleep. When you're tired, when you're after a long day, being able to lay in bed and tossing and turning, not able to sleep, it's a miserable, miserable experience. Especially when you're worried about something. And that's what the king here was experiencing. It's interesting to me, however, that they had, that this lion's den that Daniel was thrown in, it wasn't said by the men who were trying to get rid of Daniel. It wasn't said, hey, let's create a lion's den. Hey, let's throw him in the lion's den. In other words, they had this lion's den already prepared. They had a lion's den ready for people who broke the law. It seems as if this was a regular form of punishment. It seems as if that they had a den where they kept lions for punishment. These lions had probably already been used to punish other people. And so, in other words, they were a tested method of punishment. And I bet this is the only time that they ever failed. You see, because it wasn't that they failed, it's not that they failed on their own doing, it's because God prevented them from eating Daniel. God prevented them from eating Daniel. You see, sometimes we find ourselves in such situations where we're not happy. We don't want to be in that situation, but it's just the situation we're put in. And it doesn't really matter who you know. You see, the king tried to get Daniel out of this situation. The king tried really hard to get Daniel out of this situation. But he couldn't do it. The law couldn't be changed. So Daniel had to be put in the lion's den. You see, but even when it doesn't matter who we know and we're just stuck in a bad situation, God can still help us through it. See, sometimes the only person who can save us is God. And the absolute only person that can save us spiritually is God. But we must recognize that He is the only way. In spite of knowing that this law had been made, in spite of knowing that it was against the law to be put it was against the law to pray. And despite knowing that it was against the law to pray, Daniel continues to do it. We continue to see him as someone who is resolved, someone who is determined to follow God. And as he's determined to follow God, he prays knowing the consequences, knowing what could happen to him if he's caught. And I bet he knew he was going to be caught as well. Knowing that it was against the law, he went and he prayed. And I can't help but imagine that he knew it was against the law. I can't help but imagine that he knew it was against the law to pray, and therefore was praying about the fact that it was against the law to pray. I guarantee you he was praying and talking to God about that situation. And God saw him through. You see, when our culture changes, we need to turn to God and pray. A few points of application is when our culture changes, we kneel and we pray about it. And when we don't, we let others know that we're praying about it. Hey, I know that this is a rough time. I know that there are some scary and rough things going on in the world, but God's going to see us through it. I'm talking to God about it. I'm praying to God about it. You should be praying about it as well. And then also, we talk about God's goodness and we don't pay attention. That's again another aspect that we see in this story. The king worships God again and sets another decree that others should worship God. And we see that Daniel's accusers say that Daniel was paying no attention to the king's law. So we don't pay attention to the culture change and we talk to God's goodness. One last principle, one last idea. What if we as Christians, instead of being culture observers, culture critics, were culture changers? You see, in Acts 17, I believe it's in verse 6, We are described as people who turned the world upside down. Christians are described as people who turned the world upside down. What if we became known as the people who turned the world upside down? What if we were known as people who changed the culture? As Christians, we should be striving to change the culture for the better. I understand that I have now gone over. This is to make up for Sunday. So, hey, that joke went over better. All right. Thank you for your attention. Go get your kids or do whatever you need to do. You are dismissed. Thank you so much.